This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It is episode 224. And it is our second draft preview show. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering, of course, the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site for the Arizona Cardinals. Both of us have been covering the Cardinals for some time. Both of us have grown up as Cardinals fans, so we continue to be fan analysts, fanalists, insiders, and outsiders all at the same time. Seth, we took care of the first round scenarios last week. We have a lot to talk about today in this show tonight on Tuesday night. We have a lot to talk about with the offense. And believe it or not, as much talk, because we just had a whole bunch of talk about Kyler Murray and everything. We're not even talk about Kyler Murray, are we? Unless a little bit, maybe, about scenarios and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you look at what the Cardinals, have done this offseason, and it's lent a lot of people, you and I included, to expect a heavy infusion of draft talent on the offensive side of the football. So that's where we're going to kind of focus on tonight. I think that the Cardinals picked a really good season draft wise to have the needs that they have. I do think some of it is coincidence, and I do think some of it is planning, but when you look at where the draft is deepest, maybe the two worst position groups on the Cardinals, the wide receiver and the defensive line, are probably the two deepest in this draft. So it lines up pretty nicely.
And so we're not going to spend really any time, if you want to hear about the first pick in particular. Our last episode, 223, we went over basically the different scenarios and made their case for their first pick. We made a case for Kyler Murray. We talked a lot about Kyler Murray in our last show, how it makes sense, why it would make sense. We made a case for Nick Bosa. We made a case for Quinnen Williams. We made a case for Josh Allen even. And then lastly, because there is also the possibility of trading out of that top pick, we looked at scenarios for trading out and players who they could end up getting in that 4-7-10 range as well. So you can go back and listen to that show if you have not discussed that. But today we're going to talk about non-quarterbacks, because if they don't take a quarterback in the first round, if they don't take Kyler Murray, there's really no point to taking a quarterback for the rest of the draft. It's a wasted pick. So we're going to talk position on offense. We're going to talk about the wide receiver positions, the prospects. Are there any day one picks, or if in the case that the Cardinals end up with another first round pick or trade back in, prospects for day two, prospects for day three? Then we'll repeat the process, but for offensive line, who are the top prospects at tackle, interior, guys who could have be had in the late mid to late first round, day two, day three. We'll do the same thing with tight ends and then end, at least on the offensive preview, with running backs. We're not going to worry about running backs in the first round. We'll look at running backs probably late day two and day three. The Cardinals have been visiting, have met with a number of running backs. And then at the last part, we're going to talk about they made a signing. They added veteran cornerback Tremaine Brock, coached formerly by Vance Joseph at two previous stops. Formerly of the San Francisco 49ers, Minnesota Vikings, and Denver Broncos. We'll close the show with that. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's talk about receivers. The Cardinals have a big need at receiver. And so let's talk about who are the top prospects who could be, say the Cardinals manage to end up with, by trading. So if they trade Josh Rosen and go with Kyler Murray at the top of the draft, and they somehow have a mid to late, or even if they trade down and end up with a mid or late draft pick that they could use? Are there any receivers that are worth a mid to late first round pick that might fit what the Cardinals need?
So two guys that I'm just going to mention, but I don't think even like outside of, say, what, 17? Is that where New York is now?
It is, yes.
So, yeah, so say 17. And then obviously the two Raiders picks, 24 and 27. I don't think they'll be there, but DK Metcalf and Hakeem Butler. So those are two guys, like, I'd be shocked if either of those guys were available. I think they'll be the top two wide receivers off the board. So that brings I have three names I like on what I call tier one prospects. So when you look at it, the first guy's N'Keal Harry. I think N'Keal has a little Anquan Boldin in him. He's a physical guy. He tested faster than we all expected him to. So that was actually good in that sense. When you watch N'Keal play, it's ability to catch in traffic, and it's an ability to out physical anybody that tries to cover him. And so, you know, those type of things. But then he's really good with the ball in his hand, which is why I think he could fit in Cliff's offense. If it's some, you know, form of spread or air raid. ASU fans know N'Keal. I don't think he'll be there at 33, but you never know. The next guy for me is, it's crazy, but he could be the best wide receiver in this draft when it's all said and done. But the biggest thing is he's got to stay healthy. He's got a Liz Franck injury already, which is a concern, and that's Marquise Hollywood Brown. He's just like a legit nightmare with the ball in his hands. He's a game changer on the outside, but he also wins from the slot. I saw a stat today that talked about, like, he was the most successful wide receiver from the slot in college football last year. So he's a guy that is truly one of those guys that can maneuver inside out and all around the field. He's a big play threat with the ball in his hands. Obviously a vastly different type of wide receiver than N'Keal Harry. And then the third guy in the tier one, so I would say top 30, say, or top 40 players in the draft type, would be Paris Campbell out of Ohio State. Campbell's like this hybrid guy who can, who's able to do a lot of different things. He's a guy that is a good wide receiver, a scout, or a guy that works at Ohio State was talking to us about him. And this is what he text us. Let me find it real quick. Cause we were asking, like, you know, why, what's up with Campbell, you know, why are people so high on the McLaurin kid? And he said, Paris was the best route runner at the combine. And they feel like he's a guy who can win in different ways. He's a guy that can win as a weapon in the backfield. He's a guy that can win taking the ball short and making plays after the catch. He's a guy that can win deep with his speed. So when you look at Campbell, he's a guy that, you know, kind of is multifaceted and gives you a little bit of N'Keal, obviously not as big or physical, but a little bit of N'Keal and then a little bit of Marquise Brown. So those are the three guys I would look at as, like, if could be there at 33. But if the Cardinals were to get anything for Josh Rosen and or trade back from the first pick and get multiple first round picks, those are the three guys that would make sense to me.
Now, in terms of Paris Campbell, is he the type of player who, to take another Ohio State receiver in Michael Thomas, obviously I think they're different different type of players, but is he the type of player who could end up having the sort of impact that Thomas has had for the Saints? A guy that tested well, had a lot of good things, but somehow managed to slip. I mean, a guy who was as productive and as talented as the next guy, and he has just become a monster at the next level.
He's a guy, like you said, they're vastly different players, but like he is a guy that is successful. He's a guy that put up, put up a lot of numbers while he was at Ohio State. So he's a guy that can be used in different ways. So Thomas is more of a pure kind of receiver, where Campbell has a little gadget to him as well. One of the guys that I talked to about it said he thinks this floor, so floor being, you know, worst case scenario for a guy like Campbell, is a, in why he would pick him in the first round, especially late in the first round, is because he sees him at worst being having like a Chris Chambers type career. I don't know if you remember Chris Chambers of the Miami Dolphins, played in the NFL for a long time, had one 1,000 yard season, had two seasons with 11 touchdowns though, had two additional seasons with seven touchdowns. He had five seasons of 880 yards or more receiving. So, I mean, he was a guy that was kind of a big play guy, averaged one season, averaged 18 yards of catch. So when you look at him from that perspective, like he's a guy that you want the ball in his hands, you know, 6 to 10 times a game, because he's a game breaker, and that's always needed. But when you're talking about Kingsbury's offense, where in the air raid, short passes are basically an extension of the run game, a guy like Paris Campbell, a guy like Marquise Brown, a guy like N'Keal Harry, they do it in different ways, but they could all, they're all guys that can get a lot of, get a lot done after the catch, which is why I think they're important and can be fits in what Kingsbury's offense could look like.
Now, in terms of Hollywood Brown, Marquise Brown, the one thing that you look at him and you say that's, you've got something to worry about, and that's his frame. Cardinals have had another skinny type guy. Obviously, I'm not going to try and compare Marquise Brown and J.J. Nelson in terms of talent, as obviously Brown was magnificent, amazing as a college player, and J.J. Nelson was, you know, he had 35 catches his big best season at UAB, but it was a fantastic returner. But again, 5'10", 160 is what Nelson was, and we've got Brown at 5'9", 166. How concerning is that build, or do you think he can put on, say, just 10 more pounds and be like DeSean Jackson?
Yeah, I think that's what the hope is that he's a guy that has a little bit of room to put on, you know, 10 to 15 pounds, get into the high 170s, low 180s by the time, you know, it's all said and done. The biggest concern to me is not so much the frame, and it's just that he's already had a Liz Franck injury. So when you're talking about a guy, so and it's not as serious as John Ross was back when the Bengals drafted him, what, 9th or 10th overall, but it's the same type of thing. Like when you're talking about a guy whose entire game is predicated on the ability that he's going to run by you at any moment, so you have to give him, you know, 18 yards of cushion because he's going to eat that up in literally a 1.5 seconds. The concern with the foot is he going to be a guy that can consistently give you, you know, 16 games where he's able to be that game breaker, where he's not just a straight line guy because he's not able to make moves in the short and consistently cut and things of that nature. That's more of what the concern is to me, because
he become Sammy Watson?
Yeah. Like guys with lower body injuries tend to always have lower body injuries. I mean, we've seen it with DJ Humphreys. We've seen it with Robert Kimdiche. Like these guys that could, or that have struggled with before, tend to just continue to struggle with them. The thing is with Brown is that it only cost him, you know, the playoff game. So he played 12 games during the regular season. He just couldn't play in the biggest game, which was unfortunate, but just, you know, it is what it is too at that point. He played 13 games his sophomore year. So, I mean, he's played 25 career college games. He put up over 2,400 yards and 17 touchdowns. So he's, you know, like I said, he's a guy that you just find a way to get the ball in his hands.
Moving past that first tier, who are some guys that the way things play out, the Cardinals might not be able to, if their board is set, if they don't take anyone until the top of the third round at receiver, or who are some,
or if they get, or, you know, if they end up with a less than desired return for a Josh Rosen and end up getting like a pick in the late 30s, early 40s, which I know wouldn't make fans happy, but, you know, just go with the thought process of where these picks are coming from. When you look at it, the first name that jumps off is Andy Isabella. He's been a guy that's been kind of like the darling of the draft season. The biggest thing with him is he's small. I mean, you want to talk about tiny. I joked the other day, could you imagine if the Cardinals drafted at one Kyler Murray and then came back at 33 and drafted Andy Isabella? Like, one's 5'10 1/4 and 205 pounds, and the other one's 5'9 and 188 pounds. Like, that would be absolutely hilarious to just kind of see it. Isabella is one of those guys that, you know, because of his stature, he's always been overlooked by everybody, but all he does is, like, this dude just produces in the most insane way possible. And he got better every season, which I think is always one of the most important things when it comes to prospects, is that are on, what's the word I'm looking for? Because UMass is a D1 program now, right? I don't know.
It's an independent, so it's not connected. It's like your Notre Dame and BYU in terms of.
Okay, but like not, but then like on as a terrible football school. Okay.
Yes, like I thought. I when I was looking at small school guys, I like mass. I'm like, oh, it's an FBS school. What?
Yeah. So I mean, when you look at it, I mean, so, you know, freshman year he was a running back, so he's recruited to UMass as a running back, which explains his run after the catch style and ability. But two receptions, you know, for 7 yards, nothing really. Transition to wide receiver as a sophomore, and just kind of it just kind of blossomed from there. He had 62 catches as a sophomore, 801 yards and 7 touchdowns. His junior year, he had 65 catches for over 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. Oh, and by the way, each of those years, he had over 100 yards rushing, which is crazy, right? Like, you got a guy that's an 800-yard receiver and 100 yards rushing, and then a 1,000-yard receiver and 100 yards rushing. So,
yeah, his production in terms of numbers kind of matches up with what Chase Edmonds did at Fordham.
Right. And so then his last year, you look at it, 102 receptions, just call it 1,700 yards for easy math, and then 13 touchdowns. Dude's just a baller. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Like, there's no hyperbole. There's no, you're not going to draft Andy Isabella because he's a prototype. You're not going to draft Andy Isabella because he does things the way that you've seen it always done in the NFL. You're drafting Andy Isabella because you look at him and you go, holy cow, this guy is a guy that is going to be a, you know, 16 game security blanket for Josh Rosen or Kyler Murray or, you know, Brett Hundley or whoever your quarterback is. Like, this is a guy that's just going to eat up underneath routes, that's going to just be open all the time. He's going to be a guy like Julian Edelman. And so when you look at that, there's nothing, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And so if you end up with a mid second round pick for Josh Rosen, and you know, with your first pick, you obviously take Kyler Murray, and then with your 33rd pick, you're like, all right, we have, and we'll talk about this, but we have to fix this offensive line. Andy Isabella is the type of guy that makes a lot of sense in that middle of the second round. Another guy that makes a lot of sense, kind of the same type of guy, never jumped off the radar, never really became a game breaker, but is just a guy that put up steadily better numbers every season, and that was Emmanuel Hall out of Missouri. He's a guy that I think could be there at 65 at the top of the third round. So these tier two guys are really like what I would say are day two guys. So yeah, day two being both the second and third round.
Now, I wanted to point something out on Isabella, which is I think it's kind of a critical thing to note, is that the Cardinals have an in with him.
Yeah.
They have Spencer, their offensive quality control guy, Spencer Whipple, was his position coach and passing game coordinator for the last three seasons at UMass. So if there's going to be kind of like you can see some of these picks kind of lining up. They have Billy Davis, who's the linebackers coach, who was on the Ohio State staff, who gives you an inside inside knowledge about Nick Bosa, so he can pound the table for Bosa. He says you don't even have to, you just feel turning the card now, he says. And I'm sure Whipple's the same way with Isabella, a guy that he's seen just firsthand doing everything incredibly well. And so he is, in my opinion, and now I don't do the evaluation process like Seth does, but I see this connection between Isabella and the Cardinals already kind of there. He's been a name that I've been keeping my eye on, because it would not surprise me at all if he's a target that the Cardinals have. I guess ideally, probably top of the third round would make more sense. And some of the simulations I've seen are, I think, third and fourth round. I don't know how accurate those are going to end up being, but that he's a player that matches up with the Cardinals for a lot of reasons.
Right. And he matches up with what they want to do. And so, you know, you look at him, he's a guy that would really fit. Oh,
and his testing was incredible.
Yeah. 4.3 140, his short shuttle and three cone were incredible. He's just a super athlete on top of being a guy that, like I said, got better every year. And then, and that's kind of what you're looking at on day two, is you're looking at a combination of guys that have the athletic testing, but then also have the improved or improving production. So Emmanuel Hall is the next guy I was going to talk about. He's, you know, from Missouri. He's not a guy that, let's put it this way. If Emmanuel Hall put up bigger numbers, he'd be getting first round talk, but he was basically Drew Locke's like big play threat while at Missouri. So as a freshman, just caught 8 passes for 64 yards. As a sophomore, 19 for 307 yards. So where it gets crazy is his junior and senior year. So he only played in 10 games his junior year, only 8 games his senior year. His junior year, he only caught 33 passes. So I know you're thinking, like, Seth, that's awful. Like, why would this guy be of interest? He caught 33 passes for 817 yards. So just like literally 0.2 yards under 25 yards per reception. So he's like a big play freak of nature. When you look at the testing, so just a shade under 6'2", 201 pounds. When you look at his 40-yard dash, he ran a 4.39, so straight line speed was incredible. And then he jumped out of the building, 43.5-inch vertical and 141-inch broad jump. So those are 98th percentile and 99th percentile respectively. So you're talking about one of the most explosive athletes at the wide receiver position to come out in years. He's just a guy that's never been a big production guy. But when you look at it from the perspective of day two, pick 65, Emmanuel Hall putting up 33 and 8.17, and then backing that up with his senior season in only 8 games. So he missed 4 games, going with 37 and 828 and 6 touchdowns in those 8 games. Like that, those are, I mean, he was on pace for 1,000 yards. And so he is just one of those guys that has, again, steadily improved, get the ball in his hands. He's going to make a play. Those are what you're looking for in terms of, you know, wide receivers, and especially in this offense where you know that you have a possession guy in Larry Fitzgerald. You know that you have a kind of intermediate big play guy in Christian Kirk. So what are they missing? They're missing a guy that can take the top off of the defense, that can be a big play threat down the field. In the same mold, in that round 3 range, that pick 65 range, is Miles Boykin out of Notre Dame. Another guy who, you know, when you look at the numbers, never was a guy that was, you know, your number one wide receiver. But again, each and every season he got better. Didn't produce at all as a freshman. Sophomore year played in 6 games, had 6 catches, 81 yards, 1 touchdown. Junior year, played in 7 games, had 12 catches, but for 253 yards and 2 touchdowns. So over 20 yards per catch his junior year. And then improved greatly his senior year. Again, that's what, when you're talking about these like day 2 prospects, they're not day 1 prospects, obviously. So you want to see growth. You want to see guys that are getting better each and every season. And then you want to see something that, you know, from an athletic standpoint that trumps them as guys that you should draft. 59 catches this year, 872 yards for 8 touchdowns. When you look at Boykin, the only guy that outperformed Emmanuel Hall at the combine was Miles Boykin. Miles Boykin is just under 6'4". He's 220 pounds. He ran a 4.42 40. He jumped as high as Emmanuel Hall and as far as Emmanuel Hall in the vertical and broad jump. And then he put up really good short quickness numbers. In the 3 cone, he's in the 77th percentile. And then the 20-yard shuttle, he's in the 86th percentile. So, again, he is a guy that when you just put the numbers out there, he's a guy that fits that profile of that pick 65, a guy that gets better every single year, that is a freak athlete, that is a guy that can do something that the Cardinals don't have a wide receiver right now. That he's a guy that will be able to take the top off the defense, make plays down the field, and kind of be a guy that is a big play threat over the top. One guy that I forgot to mention, I had him listed before Isabella. So if you're kind of ranking these, he would be a guy that you could talk about at even 33 if he's there. And that's AJ Brown out of Ole Miss. He's the other Ole Miss wide receiver, right? He's the other guy. But man, he's a dog. And I mean that in a positive way, like 6 foot, 226 pounds. So he's not, you know, he's closer to, you know, Anquan Boldin again than you're talking about, you know, all these other guys who are kind of speedsters or big play kind of jump ball guys. So when you look at Brown, he was a guy that overshadowed by DK Metcalf, but outproduced DK Metcalf at the same time. 75 catches his sophomore year for 1,252 yards and 11 touchdowns. 85 catches for 1,300 yards this year, 6 touchdowns. He's not the athletic freak of the other guys, but he is kind of that size-speed combination coming out of the spread air raid offense at Ole Miss. A guy that, you know, if the Cardinals were to, say, take a Nick Bosa at one, A.J. Brown makes a lot of sense as their second pick, you know, kind of finishing out that wide receiver corp. He's never going to be your number one, but he's a guy that, you know, you put him and Kirk together for a long time, and I think you'll be happy.
As we look at sort of a few day three type names, the guys that, you know, day three receivers, people hit on them all the time. They're not going to be consistent, great players most of the time, but you can get production. A name for me, and it's that stands out to me, is a guy that Cliff Kingsbury is very familiar with, and that would be Antoine Wesley. He's big. He's a little bit spindly, but he comes in at 6'4". He's about 205. He does not have what anything I've read is kind of average to a little bit below average in terms of straight line speed, but he's got good vertical, good quickness. He was a high jumper in high school, or was a long jumper. He was a track guy in high school. And when it comes to his hands, is excellent. He's basically automatic. Now, guys at his size and frame don't always succeed in the league because you have to get separation, and
they can get a little bullied at times.
But if there's anything else we know, he comes from the Texas Tech system. He knows Cliff Kingsbury. He knows the offense, and he was incredibly productive. He had 88 catches for over 1,400 yards last year. I've seen projections. He's kind of there in the day three range. And I would expect him to be on their radar for anything else because it's familiar. Kind of like how Chip Kelly brought in all those Oregon guys. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy that Cliff Kingsbury kind of pounds the table for, at least in the day three range.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. He's a guy I had on my list in the day three range. Another guy that I've seen like get talk in day two. Again, this is how I would rank them. So just, you know, keep that in mind when you yell at Jess later on Twitter. These are my rankings. But Debo Samuel out of South Carolina, you know, he's not a guy. He's a guy that improved every year while he was at South Carolina, but he's not like a phenomenal athlete. He doesn't really have any traits that make you go, oh, okay, this guy is, but he is a, he's a guy that kind of wins in a number of ways, can be a possession guy, can kind of be that guy that learns under Larry Fitzgerald a little bit and then maybe takes over for him. I think he would be, you know, if he's there in the fourth round and they haven't addressed the wide receiver position, he'd be a guy that would make sense to me in that spot. Along, like Jess said, with Wesley, another guy that makes sense for me, and this is late, you know, one of these 19 sixth or seventh round picks that the Cardinals have, would be a guy like Penny Hart out of, I believe it's Georgia State, that had a really nice Senior Bowl. He's kind of a scat back, small guy. I think he's going to be a guy that can come in and contribute on specials, and then maybe you know, get a chance to be an effective wide receiver, kind of gadget guy. Again, we're talking day three. We're not talking about guys that we're expecting to come in and be, you know, 800-yard receivers in year one type guys. And I'll go through the rest just quickly. I don't want to take all the time. But wide receiver is the deepest position in the draft this year, outside of, like I said, outside of the defensive line that we'll talk about next week. But Anthony Johnson out of Buffalo is another guy. He was getting some day one talk before the season started because he has ungodly numbers while he was at Buffalo. Kind of dropped off a little bit this year, and I think kind of cemented himself as like a late day two, early day three type of player. 6'2", 207. You know, another guy that has has good hands, is able to do some different things, like, you know, as a guy that can be used in different ways. I think he'd be a nice fit. Again, we're talking day three. We're not talking early here. The reason you're going to see him on day three is he really didn't test well. He didn't run 40. His vertical and his broad jump were, and his three cone were just really, really bad. So you're going off the idea that this is just a guy that can, that can maybe be a possession type guy as things move along. Jalen Hurd used to be a running back, converted to wide receiver. Again, day three type of guy. And then Hunter Renfrow, like seventh round type of guy. You know, another one of those kind of try hard slot guys that could fit for the Arizona Cardinals.
In terms of small school players, the Cardinals have drafted 10 small school players since Steve Keim took over. They've taken at least one every single year. There are a few names out there. I don't know if they've had any contact with any of them, but in terms of small, so Jazz Ferguson is a guy who
You know what? I completely forgot about him.
Goss. And then I don't know if they have any connection, but he was mentioned on Luke Easterling's post about the small schools, and that's Ashton Doolin out of Malone. I don't know what kind of school Malone is, but
you mentioned Jazz Ferguson. The Cardinals have already worked him out. So, you know, they like him or they've already looked into him type of thing. He's a big dude and he tested pretty well. I think Doolin, I have some information on him from somebody. I got a tip on a young guy. Who was it? When you look at it, that's who it is. This kid from Campbell. Anthony Robbins, I think his name is, or is it Aaron Blockman? Yeah, Aaron Blockman was a small school guy from Campbell. I didn't even know Campbell was a real school. I thought it was a joke. So you guys in your deep scouting, you guys are crazy. But yeah, so I mean, when you look at it, this is definitely a good draft to need wide receivers. I don't think it's a good draft to want to get like a true number one wide receiver, but we've seen the Eagles. We've seen the Patriots, obviously, every other year. I don't really think you need a true number one receiver. I don't think you need a prime Larry Fitzgerald. I think if you have, you know, three Christian Kirk type guys who are, you know, potential high end two receivers, that's just as good as having a true one and then like a number two and a number three. So when you look at it from that perspective, I think it's okay to go in and find another type of guy, like I said, a N'Keal Harry or an Andy Isabella or, you know, guys like that.
All right, we'll wrap up. So we've been talking a lot about receivers. That probably went on longer than we anticipated. So coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, we're going to hit the other big need they have on offense, and that's the offensive line. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Offensive line, huge need. The Cardinals have guys. They do. They have guys at position, but they've got their tackles have 1 year left. They have Justin Pugh and J.R. Sweezy. Hopefully J.R. Sweezy does not turn into the next Andre Smith in terms of his impact. A.Q. Shipley is got 1 year left on his deal and probably doesn't have a whole lot of time left in the league. Mason Cole, we don't know what the deal was with him. They talk about him as kind of, it's starting to sound like what happened a year ago with Evan Bame. What do they seem to like the most about Evan Bame? His versatility, which means they don't really have a place for him. Like Earl Watford, he was able to play everywhere. They didn't really have a place for him. So we'll have to see what happens with Mason Cole moving forward. But the Cardinals do have needs on the offensive line, and there are guys that can fill those needs. Obviously, it's not going to happen at the top of the draft unless they trade far enough back where, say, a Jonah Williams is kind of the target. But if they're in the middle of the middle to late of the first round, who could be a guy or two who could fit the bill for them?
So I've got I've got three guys, not including Jonah Williams and Juwan, or sorry, four guys, not including Jonah Williams and Juwan Taylor, who I think will be top 15 picks, like Metcalf and Butler. I try to steer away from those guys because I don't want to like confuse myself. When you look at this draft class, I think there's three interior linemen that are what I would call day one starter type guys. Eric McCoy, I think, is the best interior lineman in this draft class. When you look at McCoy out of Texas A&M, if you want, and this is super boring, so I don't recommend it to anybody, but if you want to see the most dominant single game by an individual player, watch Eric McCoy versus Clemson. McCoy at center taking on Dexter Lawrence and Christian Wilkins, two guys projected to go in the first round, completely shut down two guys that are, you know, going to be NFL day one picks. Great, you know, great college players, and he completely kind of just owned them the whole game. I know people are going to say, well, they just drafted Mason Cole. Well, so the reality is with McCoy, he's a true center. He's a guy that has snapped in the shotgun for the majority of his career. And when you look back at Cole, a lot of the good traits about him come from when you're playing in a power offense under center. When you look at him in the shotgun, he had several bad snaps last year. It was a problem at the Senior Bowl. They had him at left tackle at Michigan, not his fault. So it could be that Cole is more suited for, you know, like a guard or tackle type position. I think McCoy is going to be a day one starter. I think he's going to be a huge asset to whoever drafts him. I would take him at 33, like, and not even think about it. With, you know, if he's on the board, I would take him over pretty much anybody at this point. The next guy is Garrett Bradbury out of North Carolina State. Outside of his T-Rex arms, there's a lot to like about Bradbury. 6'3", 306, another center guard type guy. So he's played both guard positions and then won the Remington trophy as the best center in college football last year. I think he's a guy, again, like, I think he could supplant Mason Cole as the starter without a problem. But I think he's a guy you can draft, and he can fill in for whoever is the weakest link out of your interior. So if you're asking me who's better between McCoy and Bradbury, I'd say McCoy. If you're asking me who's more valuable to the Cardinals, it's probably Bradbury, because he's a guy that, like I said, he can literally play left guard, center, or right guard. And so that makes him more valuable when you remember the fact that the Cardinals may need a left guard or a right guard or a center. And whereas McCoy, he could probably do it. I just don't know if it'd be the position for him. Cody Ford's another guy I forgot to mention that I don't think will be available for the Cardinals. So don't think I was like ignoring him. I think Cody Ford's fantastic. I just don't think he's going to be an option. And then my personal favorite kind of reminds me of a guy I loved coming out a couple years ago that the Cleveland Browns drafted, in Joel Bitonio. And that's Chris Lindstrom out of Boston College. Lindstrom's a guy that has played at right guard, and then he started at right tackle. Again, just brought it up, like, drafting 33 and you take Chris Lindstrom, you got a guy that can replace J.R. Sweezy. You got a guy that, if Sweezy moves over to left guard to replace Pugh, can, you know, replace Justin Pugh. And then, you know, heaven forbid that the offensive line stays healthy and together and produces pretty well, he's a guy that can come in and potentially replace Marcus Gilbert. And in next season. So Lindstrom, again, is kind of a guy that is just a fit for them in terms of he's a great offensive lineman. He's a nasty mauler, kind of a wrestler type guy in terms of style, but he's also a guy that fits a lot of what they need and what they need to do. So when you look at it from that perspective, I think he, you know, he makes sense for them in that way. And then the only pure tackle I'm listing is Andre Dillard out of Washington State. He's again, kind of the guy, if they were to trade back or potentially like get a mid round pick for Josh Rosen type thing. I think Dillard is ready made to start at left tackle for the air raid offense. He's the best pass protector in the class. And so if you ask any Cardinals fan what the biggest need is, it's to protect Josh Rosen. So, you know, do it right. go get the best pass protector in class. I think Dillard's going to be fantastic. I think it's going to be a really nice player in the league.
And if we look further down the draft, that this is where it's harder to peg guys, because once you get past second, maybe even top of the third round, then you've got guys that are typically, there's holes in their games. Let's be honest. They either have durability concerns, but here are some of the names of players that the Cardinals have met with. One is Zach Bailey, versatile across the offensive line. I think he started at three different positions in South Carolina. Broke his fibula at the end of last season. They've met with as well Dennis Daly out of South Carolina. So they kind of looked at some South Carolina players. Lamont Gaylard out of Georgia. They've looked at who's another guy? Tyree St. Louis out of Miami. Eric McCoy's already brought up. And then
Caleb McGarry, they just met with, right?
Yes. And then I'm pretty sure he will be an undrafted guy, because for Cardinals fans, if you pay attention to the visits and the people that the Cardinals end up bringing in for their official visits, a good chunk of them are priority free agents, because that's how they're going to win them over. A guy they just brought in was, what's his name? Marquez something out of Southern Utah. Marquez Tucker out of Southern Utah. And then
they brought in, did they bring in, or they just worked out Titus Howard, right? They met with him at the Senior Bowl, the kid out of Alabama State. So, I mean, they're doing their due diligence along the offensive line. But like you just said, you've got like the top probably eight guys, and then you've got a bunch of guys that have flaws, right? Like Caleb McGarry is 6'7", 310 pounds, and he has pretty short arms. He's not very athletic. You know, you look at those situations and you go, okay, so is he a guard? Can he play right tackle? Like, is he a guy that you want to be able, you know, that can do some, you know, that can play left or sorry, right tackle in the air raid, or is he going to have to move to guard? You know, Howard is a small school guy. He was at the combine. Okay. There was another small school guy that didn't get invited. I can't remember who though, because of like some off field stuff that happened at one time or the other. You know, then you got like a guy like Dalton Risner, who's 6'5", 312 pounds. And the question just becomes, where does he play? You know, is he an interior guy? He's played tackle while he was at Kansas State, but they had a guy, you know, in Cody Whitehair a couple years ago who I liked, who's now a center. And so you look at him from that perspective, excuse me, after the top guys, you know, you start to get into this, okay, how do they fit? What do they do? You know, a name to like, no kind of on, you know, late day two, early day three type of guy is like a Max Sharping out of Northern Illinois. He's a massive dude, 6'6", 327. Looks like a guy that could be a really good right tackle in the league. but he's probably going to have to sit a year or so. So how high does he go in this process and everything like that? So, you know, when you look at who they've met with, you mark it down, you say, okay, like obviously these internet draft boards are just kind of a reference, but go see where they're at. Like if they're in the draftable section, like Dennis Daly, all right, well, they're probably looking at him as like a day three prospect. And they're saying, okay, you know, he's 6'5", 317, but he ran like a 5.240. But then he didn't bench very much. He almost had the dreaded 8-second three cone, which, you know, we know is a deal breaker for like Justin Higdon. And, you know, he was right on that with Dorian Johnson. So you look at guys like that and you go, okay, where can they get them? And where do they fit into the entire process? And so that's, you know, those are the names to know as you kind of go through this, because it's hard to find prospects that fit a new coaching staff and then fit them, because we just, quite frankly, we don't know at this point. Like, we don't know what they prioritize. We don't know what they look for at this point. So if you find the names like an Eric McCoy that they've worked out privately, you go, okay, they probably actually like him. And he is a guy that's going to be right in that, you know, 20 to 40 pick range. So that makes sense. And so, you know, a guy like him makes a lot of sense to get to know, because he fits in with the Kingsbury offensive scheme as a center. And then you look at a guy like McGarry, like just brought up or wrote about today, you know, he's a right tackle. Okay, they probably get him on in the third round. So you just, you know, use the information that's available on the internet and understand, like, okay, some of these guys are, like just said, they bring in and they try to get a deal in place, basically a legally handshake deal, like, hey, if you don't get drafted, you know, we're going to be calling you right after the draft is over to get you set up for, you know, an undrafted free agent, to be an undrafted free agent for us. So just keep us in mind with that.
Good. Wrapping that up, we're going to come back and talk about another need, and not as critical a need, but a need nonetheless. That's at tight end. That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's time to talk tight ends. Obviously, we're not going to take a tight end at the top of the draft. That would be foolish. However, I know that Seth really, really covets one particular player, and he doesn't really think he will be at 33. But don't you just wish that Noah Fant could fall all the way down to 33? And while he's not a receiver, wouldn't he fit really nicely in that offense?
He would, and he'd be a guy that, you know, he is just a freak athlete. And I mean freak for his size. I mean, he's 6'4", 250, ran a 4.540, had a 40-inch vertical, 6.813 cone, and a 4.22 shuttle. Like, those are insane numbers when you look at them in comparison to even like wide receivers. Like, you can go to the mock draftable website and put Fant down, and you put him down as an athlete, and then move it to wide receiver, and you're like, holy crap, this is a guy that tested like Vincent Jackson, right? Like, Vincent Jackson's a really good wide receiver. Like, he's comparable to N'Keal Harry athletically. So dude's just a freak of nature. I don't think he'll be there at 33. There's like the way that Travis Kelce, the way that obviously Rob Gronkowski, that has since retired, the way that those guys have helped transform offenses. And then you got a guy like Eric Ebron, who just went to Indianapolis and put up, you know, insane numbers for the first time in his career, when he finally had, you know, somebody that knew how to use them. And so when you look at the way it goes, I don't think that Fant is a guy that's going to be available at 33. I just think that the way the NFL's trending and everything like that, when you can get a guy that's going to go for 700 yards and 13 touchdowns, like an Eric Ebron did, it's going to be really hard to justify, you know, him getting out of the first round. But Fant would be the only one, because TJ Hawkinson, I doubt, is going to be there. He's another one of the guys that tested out really well and is beloved by everybody heading into this. Hawkinson's getting talked about like as high as 9th overall. So we'll see how that, or 7th overall, excuse me, to the Jaguars. So that's kind of, you know, he's probably out of their range. From there, so Fant at 33, two guys at 65 that could, or three guys, excuse me, that could interest me at 65, Irv Smith out of Alabama, Dawson Knox out of Mississippi, and then Jay Sternberger, out of Texas. A&M. So obviously Smith is he's a little smaller. He kind of fits in the Charles Clay mold though, like 6'2", 240, kind of more H-back-ish than tight end. When you look at him, he's a guy that's going to be a pretty good blocker, but he's again, more of a wide receiver type, you know, kind of a move tight end H-back type of guy than those. Knox is a really interesting one. It's a name to know. Dawson Knox out of Mississippi. All right. So he's 6'4", 255. He's a guy that didn't get a ton of work in college, you know, but when you're talking about being on a team with DK Metcalf and AJ Brown, I mean, it's going to be hard to get work, you know, in that offense. And so Knox had 39 receptions for 605 yards in his career. So no touchdowns in his career. Really, really capable blocker. And that's why I think he's an interesting one, because he's a decent size speed guy, and he could be a guy that really kind of works his way into the offense over the next couple of seasons. So that's a guy to watch. Like I said, 65 would be the earliest. You might even be able to get him at the beginning of day three. And then Sternberger was another guy. Again, didn't test as well as everybody was expecting. Everybody expected a little bit more of an athlete, ended up being a 4.75 guy, which I think is going to push him down into day three or like late day two type. Like, these aren't guys, when you draft a tight end high, they've got to have a trump trait over other players. And so, you know, Sternberger comes from a spread offense. Knox comes from a spread offense. Both are more than capable blockers though, so that's always important. Sternberger's obviously a better college player in terms of production than what Knox was, but he is a guy that only had 1 year really of production. So so you kind of watch and see, you know, how that falls overall with him. Day three, I mean, I don't hate the kid out of Notre Dame, Elise Mack. It's not bad.
But Foster, better than Troy Nicholas.
Well, he's going to be healthy. So, you know, 6'4", 250, again, another guy that can probably, you know, be had on day three somewhere. Foster Moreau out of LSU. You know, they like to run the football quite a bit at LSU. So, it's not, you know, the worst thing at all. But is he a guy that can fit into Cliff Kingsbury's offense? That's the hardest thing when you kind of are starting to sample out tight ends now. It's like, all right, so you've got your H-back tight ends, which is more of like the Charles Clay mold. So Fant's obviously the top of that list, but then you've got other guys like Irv Smith and there's one more. I can't remember whose name. Oh, Dan or Caleb Wilson out of UCLA. Guys that aren't exactly like great blockers or used as blockers that much. So you have to kind of follow and watch and see if they are going to ask a lot of blocking out of their tight ends. I would say no based on who's on the roster, but at the same time, you never know. Maybe a Dawson Knox or a Foster Moreau make more sense because they're guys that have blocked more and they can come in and do that.
And the other guys, just to kind of throw some of the names out there, the players they've met with. This doesn't mean anything. So, like Seth mentioned, Jay Sternberger is a guy that they have worked out. They've looked at Dax Raymond out of Utah State. He's maybe a seventh rounder, maybe a priority free agent type guy, isn't he?
Yeah, and again, when you're talking about tight ends, it's hard to distinguish what is important in the NFL anymore because,
there's very few guys that fit both roles. So you've got it kind of like guys, the receiver position. So you've got the X, right. You've got the slot, you've got the, and you have that with your tight end. So you've got the inline, you've got your Y, you've got your H back.
So, yeah. And so that's what you're looking at now is like, okay, you know, they bring in Dax Raymond out of Utah State. He's 6'5", 255. But when you look at his numbers, they don't, and you know, I don't know a ton about Utah State's offense, if I'm being completely honest, but they don't show a guy that's going to be more than kind of a specialized matchup, right? Like he's a guy that you'll bring in as a guy that can block and then hope that he turns into a guy that can catch a little bit afterwards. So, you know, and he's probably a priority free agent late. I mean, they've got those five stupid picks around 6 and 7. So
it's only four now. Never mind. No, it's still five.
Yeah. So that's the thing is like Dax Raymond makes sense there, right? Cause okay, well, we're just looking for a blocking tight end. All right, well, let's just like let's ensure we get this guy who is likely an undrafted free agent. Let's just make sure we get him. We don't have to worry about it.
Right.
So you know, those type of guys all kind of make sense.
And wrapping up that, we're going to come back and talk about a position you probably don't think the Cardinals really need to focus on, but that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, talking about running backs. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of talking is Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk briefly about running backs. They have looked at a few running backs, but we can probably take off day one, probably day two. So, but if we're looking rounds three on, are there any running backs worth looking at?
So, I mean, I think he's going to go day two, but we'll see. An interesting guy is Miles Sanders, the guy that had to follow poor Saquon Barkley at Penn State. You know, it's never easy to replace a legend, right? And so Sanders had the unenviable task of stepping in. He was the backup at Penn State as a freshman and sophomore. So very lightly used, obviously, his first two seasons. A combined 56 carries his first 2 years. Had 220 carries this year. Went for 1,274 yards and 9 touchdowns. He's a guy that consistently put up 6 yards a carry. And so even in less than optimal situations or, you know, limited chances, he put up big numbers. So another guy to watch, and he tested awful. And I think the Cardinals have met with him too, was Devin Singletary, right?
Privates. They used one of their official 30 on him.
Yeah, so Devin Singletary out of the Florida Atlantic, yeah, FAU. Golly. So he is that height, right? He's only 5'7". I thought he was 5'9". But so he tested terribly for his size. He was a 4.66 40, a 7.32 3 cone, which doesn't mean a whole lot to you guys, but that's not good when you're talking about running backs. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you're looking at it from, okay, he's a guy that just puts up massive amounts of numbers. He's a pure runner. He's a guy that the question I have with Singletary is honestly, like, he's not a receiving back. He's not a guy that looks like a third down back. So he looks like he's a guy that was a bulk carry guy. I mean, he got 300 carries as a sophomore and then 260 as a junior, to put up the numbers he did. And he only had 25 catches in those two seasons. So I'm interested to see, you know, what their thought process is with Singletary. I mean, I don't think he's going to get drafted here. I'd be shocked. But,
well, maybe they see him as a – now, Stephon Taylor ended up being an okay receiver. I don't remember what he's like in college, but he was a bulk runner at Stanford. And he developed into – for the 4 years he was here, very solid special teams player, good depth guy to come in and play on third down. So maybe they see him filling a role in that sort of way since he has the – you know, he is that – actually, he's built a lot like Stephon Taylor was.
He is, and that's why. So it'll be interesting to see what they think of him. Another guy, I don't know where he's going to go, but this dude is a straight up like big play threat when he gets the ball in his hand. And so when you talk about, you know, kind of change of pace or guys that can spell David Johnson for, you know, X amount of plays, you want a guy that can be the same type of threat running the football as he is, or catching the football as he is running the football. And so Daryl Henderson out of Memphis is that kind of guy. He had 1,900 yards rushing this year. So one of the big things that Justin and I looked at when we were doing the draft breakdown podcast was we looked at average yards per carry. And you might think, well, that's not a big deal. But here's the thing is, like, when you're talking about, especially like a guy from Memphis, you want to see big numbers there. Like anything below 5.5 is a red flag because you're talking about a guy that should be a superior athlete to everybody he plays against. So with that in mind, Daryl Henderson, the last 2 years, averaged 8.9 yards per carry. So he's a guy that got the ball in his hands and did a lot with it. 24 receptions as a sophomore and 19 as a junior, but he improved in his yards per reception. He went up from 9.4 to 15.5 yards per reception as a junior in his last year. So guy had over 2,300 yards of offense. He's a guy that if they drafted him at 65, I wouldn't understand it, but when you're just talking about talent, when you're talking about drafting the best players, he's the type that would fall into that. Now, again, I'm not advocating it. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying what he is as a player. You know, and then you got some other guys on day three that I think could make sense. Jonathan Love coming back from a knee injury is going to be interesting. Justice Hill out of Oklahoma State is a guy that can, you know, that is interesting to watch. Miles Gaskin out of Florida has just so much wear on him already. Like, that's what always concerns you. A guy to watch and somebody that I always thought was going to like kind of break out and never did, and he's been behind a bunch of studs, and so it would make sense to come to Arizona where he'd be behind another stud, would be Mike Weber out of Ohio State. Weber is a guy that had over 1,000 yards as a freshman and then like never really got the ball again, but he was over 6 yards a carry as a freshman, 6.2 as a junior, 5.5 last year, almost had 1,000 yards rushing on only 170 carries. you know, put up over 20 receptions in two seasons. So he's a guy that's kind of a big play guy from scrimmage with the ball in his hands. And I think he's going to be a guy you can get like late in the draft, like round five, round six, if for whatever reason they decided they needed a running back, which
they look, really don't. I mean, they got Chase Edmonds, they got DJ Foster, they got TJ Logan. They definitely have talent there, and even then it was underutilized,
right?
To be honest.
And so, but that's again, that goes back to what we talked about last week, and this is, you know, to kind of wrap it up, but if you are creating a team, obviously you're going to want to create the team that your head coach wants. And so maybe that's what Cliff Kingsbury wants. Maybe that's why they're bringing in Devin Singletary and these type of guys to figure out who they want to be their number two running back.
And we will wrap up that edition of the Rise Up Sierra podcast. We'll come back for one short bit, and we'll talk about one addition the Cardinals have made. Since we probably won't get a chance to really talk about it other time, they have added a cornerback, Tremaine Brock. We'll talk about that on our Rise Up Sierra podcast when we come back. We're back on the final segment of the Rise Up Sierra podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals had Tremaine Brock. It was a kind of out of the blue. They hosted two veteran cornerbacks in Tremaine Brock and Morris Claiborne. The report came out that they were to sign Brock. That was announced on Tuesday. And they add a player who hasn't been, really has not been that great a player over the years, had a particularly productive 2013. However, he's a guy that Vance Joseph knows quite well. He was the defensive backs coach when Brock signed on with the 49ers as an undrafted rookie. Vance Joseph brought him over a year ago to the Broncos, and now he joins the Cardinals, making it now the third stint he matches up with Joseph. What can we expect from Brock? And I asked John Heath, who runs the Broncos Wire site for my network, and he played mostly outside, wasn't particularly good, but it appears that he is fairly versatile. Mike Jarecki saying that he will likely that he's the favorite right now to play in the slot. But like you said, Alford can move inside. So maybe if he's going to be cornerback three, he pushes Alford inside and Brock mans the outside of nickel. But I like the addition. If anything else, he's a solid vet. He's played in the defense that Vance Joseph has run. And
he's been relatively healthy too.
Right. And he's played cornerback in the league. So now you have more than just David Amerson, an experienced cornerback going against Brandon Williams, and Dietrich Nichols, who was an undrafted rookie a year ago. So it's just adding depth talent. Whether or not he comes out to anything, we'll have to wait and see.
Right. And it's one of those signings that just makes sense when you look at it from a number of perspectives. The first being that they don't have a slot cornerback, right? So they needed somebody, something, whether it's to play slot, whether it's to come in and play boundary and slide Robert Alford into the slot, whatever it is, it made sense. And it makes more sense when you look at it that they were looking at Morris Claiborne. Claiborne is probably going to sign for more money. So they were able to get maybe a lesser talent at a significantly cheaper price.
But also has value and familiarity with the defense.
Right, that there won't be a learning curve on as well. So I don't think – I mean, it's not going to be a signing that anybody writes home about, but it's not going to be a signing that you're going to go, what the heck is this team doing? Like, this doesn't make sense. No, it makes perfect sense. We'll see if it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But it's a low-risk, high-reward type signing.
And as we saw with a year ago when the Cardinals side Ben Wickery, Brock in this sense, he's much older. He's much older, but with him and the kid Shaw that they brought up, that they signed as well, they remind me in terms of familiarity. They kind of can be that Ben Wickery type player who knows the defense, who can be a little bit versatile, and probably will flash in the offseason and preseason because of the lack of that learning curve.
Right. They'll be the ones that look good in the defense because they know what they're doing.
Yes. And with that, that's probably about all we need. We don't need to talk about Brock more than that, because if he's getting that much playing time, we're probably, especially if they add a cornerback in the draft, we'll talk about the defensive players in a week. So if you want to type, this wraps up this edition of the Rise Up Sierra podcast. We're done with the offense in terms of previewing the draft. So if you want to hear our talk, our topics and our takes on the first round, the top pick, scenarios for that top pick, go back to episode 223. This one, 224, is all about the offensive side of the ball. We're going to come back next week, talk about defense. And after that, we will have our mock draft to wrap up our draft coverage until after the actual draft happens and we can react to the guys the Cardinals actually add. And with that, thanks for listening. As always, that's Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, and I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in again a week from now.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.